Hi, and welcome to the Planet Podcast, a technology, geek, and science-related podcast based out of Baltimore, Maryland. Today is a new format for the podcast. We're doing a panel discussion on the future of cell phones. Today I have guests Tim Connolly from BetaNews.com.
How you doing?
Mark Millen from the Los Angeles Times.
Hey.
Gus Sentimentis from the Baltimore Sun.
Howdy.
And Davidra Hardwar from the Symbiotic Podcast.
Hello, hello.
How are you guys all doing today?
Great.
It's peachy.
Very well.
That is great to hear. Peachy is always good. So today we are discussing about cell phones and their future. The first part we're doing in this podcast is we're doing it in five parts to talk about cell phones. The first part will be discussion of the future of smartphones, and particularly how they're affecting how phones are coming to the consumers nowadays. The second part will be about cell phone pricing, and should cell phones be free, subsidized, or should people have to pay for full for them? The third part will be on the cost of cell phone plans themselves, and who might be shaking the apple cart, per se, in the opinion of our panels today. The fourth part will be about government interaction in the cell phone industry, particularly with the new liberal FCC, and also Congress investigating cell phone companies for anti-consumer tactics. And our final part will be about each of the panelists' views on what they want for the future of mobile connected devices, and particularly what they want to have out of both their cell phone and the carriers and plans that they have. So I will first throw out this question to everyone. What is your view right now on the future of smartphones, particularly with new Android phones coming out and becoming really popular? The Apple iPhone was the first major smartphone to come into this, the smartphone market for the general consumers. What do you think the future is going to hold, particularly in your view? And I'll start with Tim.
Well, personally, I'm of the view that, you know, we're seeing the market converge, you know, and convergence has been a big thing in telecommunications for, you know, as long as we can remember. But, you know, as it is right now, especially with Android, we're seeing phones getting smarter and then mobile computing devices getting more mobile. So they're sort of, we're going to reach in my opinion, we're going to reach a center point where devices will be, you know, we're going to be dealing with a certain level of quote unquote intelligence on your device with a minimum level of connectivity. So I don't think that's going to mean a huge divergence from form factors from what we're seeing right now. I think things are probably going to stay about at this level right now. Having touchscreen smartphones was a gigantic breakthrough, and everyone has jumped on that. So I think that's going to stick around for, you know, a couple more years at least until someone does something drastic. And I don't think the operating system is actually going to be the number one priority like we see in desktop computing. I think the less people know about their operating system, actually, the better it is. So I'm of the opinion that things like UIs and skins and everything on mobile operating systems are you know, the best possible thing. You know, so the carriers and the manufacturers can own the experience, and that, you know, Android is going to be a lot more prevalent and is going to continue to grow. But we're actually, I think, going to see the face of Android a lot less.
Okay. Mark, your view?
I think for that reason that Tim just mentioned, the user interface of Droid, or Android rather, was the reason that I knocked Droid in my review. I'm so glad that Google has come to this game, because the smartphone market, in terms of software, was something that Apple owned for the last 2 years. And RIM makes the best hardware, Apple makes good hardware, and the best software. And now we finally have some competition there with Google coming into the game. But at version 2.0 where they are now, it's still not quite where it needs to be. it's the software is great and the hardware is getting better. Motorola is finally back on track. They haven't really done anything in the smartphone market, in my opinion. They've got the Blur, but what's the name of that phone? It's the software.
The Click. Click is the phone, and Moto Blur is their interface.
Right. Built on top of Android, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Android 1.5, I believe, as well.
Yeah, and that's another problem, because we have new Android-based phones coming out that aren't based on 2.0. I think Google kind of left some of these hardware makers out to dry when they said, oh, yeah, it's open source. We got this cool version 1.5, just build on top of it. HTC is like, all right, we've made all these cool features. And they're like, all right, now there's this 2.0. You got to rebuild all of your software.
Yeah, it's almost leading to like a Windows Mobile situation with like different hardware on different, you know, and different operating systems on that different hardware. It's getting to be confusing for developers, it seems like.
Right.
Okay. Gus, what's your view?
Yeah, and I was just going to add to that, actually, that for Google to pull off the Droid, they had to really partner closely with Motorola to really kind of work together with them to integrate software and hardware. But overall, I think when we talk about the future of smartphones, we're talking about an industry that's more and more all about powerful mobile computing. And I think I forget exactly when in the near future this is going to happen, but it's something like more smartphones will be sold than computers in the very near future, and the smartphone market is just a really different market than the computer market. People are doing different things on their smartphones than they are doing with their laptops. The people that I talk to on the ground in the mobile industry and in something like mobile advertising, they really talk about their market being really unique and different compared to, say, desktop, you know, computing, desktop web surfing. And they think it's going to be a bigger market, frankly, the ones who are really optimistic about smartphones, you know, with Android 2.0 coming online and this becoming more, you know, ubiquitous. There's just going to be greater opportunities for people in the mobile space.
Now, I find it kind of interesting because the idea that cell phones are becoming more ubiquitous. Recently, there was a talk about how in Japan, computer literacy in young adults is actually dropping significantly because most people are using cell phones now. How do you think that it's going to affect our the way we currently use technology now if more and more kids are using either T9 or interpretive, you know, texting to send, you know, messages and emails? I mean, you're starting to see this kind of effect on kids now where they're writing papers in class, where they're writing LOL, you know. WTF, OMG, teacher.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think you'll start to see that as the user interfaces on smartphones become just so much easier to use, I think people will start to have that same expectation of ease of use of their desktop computers. And if they're not that easy to use, they'll just rely on their mobile computing devices more and more.
I think we're definitely seeing that leapfrog even here in some of the urban communities where the internet is kind of just leapfrogging from computers to mobile for a lot of communities where they never really spent any significant amount of time on a computer connected to the internet because they never really had a computer in their house. But now that phones are becoming more affordable, I think it's actually a good thing because it's reaching a market it may never have gotten to.
Tim, your view on it?
It's an interesting thing to look at from our perspective, what's going on in the rest of the world, because I was recently talking to someone from the World Wide Web Foundation who was saying that people in Africa, their first experience on the web is the mobile web. You know, so there is a completely different evolution going on over there. People, you know, rather than having to sit down at a computer, you know, like I'm sure we all had to, you know, you listen to the dial-up tone, you go through your, you know, your ISP, you deal with all this other stuff. You have to be semi-computer literate to get online. And these people now can just, you know, hit a button on their phone and do it. So it's really, I find it extremely interesting because we're going to get to see a different evolution of people experiencing the web. They're going to be, we're mobile first.
Devendra, what do you think?
I think it's ultimately a good thing. I used to work in IT support, and I can tell you, even in, like, over the past 8 years, computer literacy was never really all that high. Like, people just kind of want to a lot of people just want to use their computers like to write papers and do work or just have some fun with, but they're not too interested in the stuff going on underneath. We geeks love that stuff, but I'm not sure about general consumers. I think ultimately, you know, technology should sort of fall to the background like that, and people should just be able to do what they want with those devices. And that's what I find really interesting with the, you know, the rise of cell phones in African countries. It's technology being used for communication. Doesn't matter how that's happening. It's just that they have the tool to do it. And I think that's ultimately a good thing.
Now, it's kind of interesting nowadays. You're starting to see cell phones, like when you first got them. I remember when I was a lot younger, when you first saw like the Nokia like 580 5820, if anyone remembers those. Mm-hmm. Like the old, like it was all like cool looking. And then you saw like the Matrix cell phone, which was still not even a smartphone, but was just very cool looking and had its little green screen. And then like, I remember the first smartphone I had was actually a Palm. I mean, Palm were the big players when they first came out with the real first smartphone personal digital assistants.
Yeah. You're a bit of a Palm fanboy, Patrick.
I had a handspring. I had the cell phone adapter for the visor that lets you just throw that right in there, as well as
wow.
a circuit tester as well that I could just throw into the thing, like Game Boy cartridges. And there was also a Chinese knockoff Game Boy adapter so I could play Game Boy games on the visor.
Oh, I remember
as well.
That. Yeah.
And that was some good times.
Wow.
Do you pre?
No, actually. Sadly, I was about to buy one, but recently with the new droids, I'm going to have to say, sorry, Palm.
Maybe next year.
Yeah. Maybe when the Pixie comes out with Wi-Fi.
Well, aren't we? We're expecting the new top-end Palm device, you know, because they have three spots. You know,
yep.
there's the Pixie, the Pre, and then there's still the Trio Pro sitting there on their top, you know, and that's going to be replaced really soon. So I'm looking forward to seeing their new, like, heavyweight device come in.
Yeah, because the one thing with the Palm that was always – I'm not a huge BlackBerry fan at all. I always find their user interface very cumbersome. I always found it very, you know, difficult to work around. Supporting it was a pain in the butt for the IT that I helped do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Palm was one of those things where it worked really well. And the WebOS is this nice, ubiquitous interface that automatically syncs and does it, unlike the Motorola Blur, which automatically pulls all your contacts and is like, it will edit them and change them and do this weird thing with them. The WebOS does it really well and actually does not have to have phone access once it pulls them down initially. I mean, internet access to, you know, keep using them. But the one thing with the WebOS, or Palm in particular, is that I have actually a Centro right now because I really like the keyboard. And the Pixie is almost like the Centro's, you know, older brother, or, you know, little brother, sorry. And they need to come out with a professional version of that phone with the keyboard as well. So it is basically the mix between the Pre without having the slide-up part, but it's very, like, you know, no moving parts, it's going to work utilitarian-like, but has all the pro features that you need. What do you guys think of that for Palm?
I like the idea behind the Pre. I think the layout, I think somebody drew up the hardware and said, hey, this looks good. And everybody was like, yeah, it looks great, let's build it. And they just made this, like, really plasticky, toy-feeling, like, piece of crap. The keyboard is junk. I think they're almost there.
Yeah, I mean, it was important that the Pre was, like, their first device in this whole, like, their new, I don't know, this is, like, Palm's next step of evolution. But the Pre was, like, it was, it fit a really interesting point in time where, you know, Android, the G1, had come out, but it was kind of, like, people, there was publicity about it initially. But after a few months, people really started, like, hating on that phone because of, you know, the many hardware faults. With the Pre...
Mm-hmm. You were saying
it was on T-Mobile. I think pretty much nobody was willing to switch to T-Mobile at that point.
That and the battery life and the clunkiness of the G1, like, just it was interesting to geeks, but ultimately, like, all that fanfare died down. The Pre was, like, a gorgeous new phone. It got a lot of hype, and Palm was able to really sell this idea of WebOS fixing things that the iPhone couldn't do, like multitasking and all that jazz. So it's important, like, just symbolically that the Pre was there. It's like, it is this objectively pretty thing until you get it in your hands and start trying to type on that keyboard. It's just good that it got more people paying attention to Palm again after so many people thought they were dead.
you know, multitasking on a PC on a laptop is more important than heavy-duty multitasking on a cell phone, except for, you know, the most power of users. So, I mean, with an iPhone 3GS, you can still sort of move, you know, it may take you one or two extra clicks, but you can still move around the apps, you know, relatively easily and not lose your spot. So it's how much of that is sort of like marketing hype. We see the Droid sort of saying, you know, we do what the, you know, that Apple iPhone doesn't do, and multitasking is one of them. And is that just a little bit of overhype there?
Seems like a really like limiting factor for the iPhone, just for certain apps, like things like Pandora or Last.fm, where you turn on your station, but once you leave the app, you get no music, you get nothing. And to me, it feels strange to have this really powerful mobile computer that can't play music in the background while I'm checking my mail. That just seems kind of ridiculous to me. And that I recently jailbroke my iPhone. One of the first things I did was put the backgrounding app on, because it's just, that's the way it's supposed to work, you know?
Yeah. That is the killer use scenario right there.
Yeah, like for me, I'm not going to buy an iPhone personally, because I have some issues with the fact that I cannot legally get it unlocked in the United States. I think it's one of the issues that after, you know, 9 months, all other AT&T phones I can get the unlock code for, as long as I still maintain my contract, but with the iPhone, I can't. And then the other issue is that the fact that certain apps, like, say, for example, Pandora on the webOS will continuously keep playing in the background, but if I exit out of it while in the iPhone,
exactly,
you know, I lose that playing in the background. Granted, I lose more and more memory, but nowadays with the 3GS, they have I believe it's 512, or is it 256 megas of actual physical RAM in there now?
512.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, the thing, and the real good thing the 3GS has going for it, is that it's very, very fast. So it's at a point where, you know, you can close out of an app and open up something else, and it almost feels like that app was always open, but it is used scenarios like the Pandora thing that really show how limiting the lack of true multitasking can be.
But something that Android is showing us is that widget-based interfaces are actually a huge use for multitasking. Like, I have the G1, and, you know, it's pretty clunky. It's whatever, 528 megahertz processor. But I can still run, like, four widgets simultaneously before I experience any lag. So, that's something you don't think about it as, like, a weather widget or something on your home screen as being a running task that has to be multitasked, but I mean, I think there's definitely, that is one of the places where multitasking is going to become a necessary feature that differentiates Android, you know, for one, from the iPhone.
Now, I think one issue when coming up to mobile OSs is, again, the ability of having it work in different countries. Different countries have different requirements for their particular type of languages. Like, for example, in China, a lot of the screens still have to be capacitive, which is you have a pressure sensor that you, or not capacitive, have to be resistive. So, like, say, the old palm phones where you had to use a stylus because you're doing a contact between two plates, you have to actually draw your characters if you're going to be doing, you know, a lot of texting and stuff like that, because you can't have all those different, you know, kanji on there for your language. How do you think that's going to affect, you know, the ability of having some sort of ubiquitous easy phone? Like, China has their own version of Android called OPhone. Do you think this might be affecting other, you know, abilities for smartphones in the future?
Are you saying that they're going to stick with resistive for this? Because that's not necessarily true. Like, there are, you know, there are cell phone interfaces that can handle, like, Chinese and Japanese language stuff.
The one thing, there's a lot of the Android-based phones, though, that are going to be coming out in China will be resistive from all reports, though, lately.
That's interesting.
Doesn't the iPhone have that feature where you can draw with your finger, draw like Chinese characters if it's set to China?
It's a little spotty. Like, I've tried playing with it, and it can, like, the characters that it comes out with will sometimes, like, it's any, you know, kind of object or, you know, relational recognition stuff that doesn't quite get it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't get why the screens have to be resistive to use the stylus, because you can still do it on a capacitive thing, can't you?
I believe you can, and I mean, if Apple included that stylus that they include with their new point-of-sale iPod attachments, you know?
Yeah, credit card machine.
Yeah, that's actually, I think that's pretty interesting, is another feature about smartphones is the idea that Apple's now added that feature where, hey, we can have attachments. How do you think that might affect things in the future? Because one of the particular things Apple really touted when they announced that were blood test meters for diabetics. And what other features do you think might be in you could imagine being evolved from that?
That is actually something that is the number two most important feature in the next 5 years that I think it was Gartner predicted is going to be on-the-go healthcare stuff. So that's going to, you know, that not only blood tests for people with, you know, diabetes or whatever, but, you know, any particular, like, I need to take a pill or something, or, I couldn't really come up with it now because healthcare is not my area of expertise, but that's definitely, absolutely going to be one of the most important things going forward.
Yeah, and another area is the this is Gus. Another area is the restaurant and hospitality business. If you're suddenly able to introduce iPhones into the enterprise that are able to take people's orders and close hotel reservations and just sort of, you know, it really opens up Apple to a whole other revenue stream in the enterprise.
I don't know if they're going to be able to make the jump with waiters pulling out their phones and, like, taking orders on it. I know. Actually, I've used my iPhone and used the note feature in some interviews and just, like, thumbing through to find my next question that I want to ask somebody. And they're like, dude, are you texting during the interview?
Yeah.
I have to, like, explain it every time.
I interviewed the CEO of Micros Systems Incorporated, and they're they're definitely the U.S.'s largest maker of point-of-sale terminals, and they are offering iPhone in their enterprise solutions. You are going to be seeing people whipping out iPhones and closing orders.
Because that whole platform was like running on WinCE for the past
decade
or so.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Dell was a big hardware supplier too, right?
I actually I had worked at an Apple store as a genius during Christmas when they first release those devices, and I literally facepalmed when I was like, wait a minute, this is an Apple store, and you have a non-Apple product that's using Windows to do it, and even the manager and the person who was from training said, yeah, please don't say anything about it. We already hate ourselves.
Apple, don't play that. Actually, just yesterday, I saw a story, I actually wrote up a story about this wheelchair electronics company that's basically integrating iPod touches and iPhones into their chairs. And it's offering like diagnostics for the wheelchair and all sorts of things. Like it can offer how fast the chair is going and the compass heading and things like that. It's just like the more we see these sort of attachments for the iPhone, you know, the less it is about being a phone and the more it's like a mobile computing interface, which is really exciting.
Or a tricorder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there was that. I believe that NASA attachment they said that actually is for analysis and molecular like comparison stuff that can actually take samples of a probe that they just came out with.
Yeah, that was wild.
Now to go into our next part, we have cell phone pricing. Right now, the biggest shaker I personally think would happen to be T-Mobile and their very for a long time rumored dark plans. Where they're now offering unlimited data, unlimited SMS, and unlimited phone without the phone. So you have to come with your own phone for only $50, a little bit more than that with tax and fees. There's only one other plan that I know that's even cheaper than that, and I currently have that. That's the Sprint Cero plan.
Which they don't offer anymore.
They don't technically offer it, but, you know, as long as you have an employee's email address and you know how to shake some hands, you might be able to get it still. The Cero plan was the Sprint employee referral offer, and for unlimited data, unlimited text, and 500 minutes anytime, starting at 6, free nights and weekends, I'm only paying $35 with fees.
Okay, quit bragging.
Hey!
Wow.
I'm just saying, what is your view? What would force companies to start bringing all their plans down to that range? I mean, $35 is that range where I'm thinking, if I'm only getting 500 minutes, but I'm still getting unlimited data and unlimited SMS, I personally think that's the most I think I should ever pay for something like that. Like unlimited.
You can't even get like a $35 voice-only plan, though, now. Yeah. My first cell phone had a $30 plan from AT&T, but within a few years when I was ready to upgrade, if I had changed from that plan, I wouldn't have been able to get it back again because all talk plans were $40 plus. Which is kind of ridiculous. So now that we're dealing with data, I'm not sure if we're going to... I feel like $50 is going to be the sweet point for this sort of stuff, including data. Not sure if we're going to see much below that for the next few years.
I think pricing is going to stay about the same, if not even go up, especially if LTE is introduced and it's just offering a far better user experience. I think when you look at studies, like what can people live without? I mean, think about it. Even in this recession, you know, Apple did blockbuster sales, and you know, and Google's been really, you know, introducing Android, and you know, so people don't want to live, will not live without their cell phones, and they're willing to pay for, you know, these plans. So I think there's just going to be many more profits for AT&T and Verizon.
Definitely. I mean, there's just such little competition in that industry. Like, what? Why would prices go down?
Well, you you do actually have a new source of competition, particularly being the MVNO or mobile virtual network operator. Some examples of these would be on the West Coast, MetroPCS, who's a really big player growing out. And then here on the East Coast, a large push from a brand new upstart, Cricket, if anyone's seen that one at all.
But isn't that what Walmart is depending on for their cheap line of phones? And this is where all this hype really started, because pretty soon, I'm not sure if it's available now, but you can soon be able to like walk into Walmart, get a cheap phone, and like an unlimited $50 a month plan. It's not the greatest phone in the world, but you know, it's something.
Yeah, like Cricket is an example. Like another example of MVNO would be like Virgin Mobile or Boost.
Yeah. I was a part of Helio. I'm not sure about MVNOs anymore. It just seems kind of crazy. But you know, we're talking about pricing. The one thing that could be very interesting is if Google keeps heading in the direction that they're going, I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to see like free Android phones coming out eventually, like not very far from now, maybe by next holidays or in 2 years, because that would really that would be an amazing boon for them if they're able to offer that sort of thing and get people onto Android and they only have to worry about their monthly fees.
We're seeing that in Europe right now. The I believe it's the T-Mobile Pulse, which is made by Huawei. That is free, and it is being touted as like the, you know, the best introductory smartphone of all time. And yeah, we're not seeing that in the US yet, but hopefully we will.
One thing, actually, an interesting comment when you make about subsidized phones, like from Google particularly, Devendra, is on your last episode of Symbiotic Podcast, one of your co-hosts, I believe it was, is it Darren, I believe?
Dwayne,
thank you. Mm-hmm. Was talking about how, because Google has so much money, and if you look at their past, like he didn't mention this part, but if you look at their past, how they forced the open spectrum for the 700 megahertz spectrum with the initial bid offer that Verizon bought, it would be interesting to see if Google would provide a free service in general. This is kind of jumping ahead a little bit to the effects of, you know, the FCC and also with the future of mobile devices. But do you think that Google could actually provide some sort of open network that everyone would be allowed access to? I mean, if they were able to have an open, like basically create their own MVNO that was paid for via Google ads, like what does everyone else think about that idea? As if a carrier was able to do that, saying, hey, we'll provide you free internet service, your phone service would be just straight, like it wouldn't be voice anymore, it wouldn't be SMS, it would be all digital, and then you just have this smart device.
The open network is the internet. I mean, you can almost see where they're going. Google just bought Gizmo. They have Google Voice. All you need is an internet connection, and there's plenty of wireless internet out there, and you can make a phone call. The FCC just jumped in and ensured that AT&T would offer VoIP over 3G. So, I mean, the entire framework is there, and Google now owns the company to make that happen. So I think if we'll be able to access phones without paying for the calling plan, like, for example, VoIP phones that only connect via data, then you have your cell phone there without paying for a voice plan.
Yeah, and that's like pretty much the basis of all the new rumors starting at TechCrunch about like the official Google phone or like a Google branded phone. That is, it's a VoIP machine and a data machine, and I can definitely see something like that happening eventually.
You could tell Google wanted to get on that 700 spectrum; they just didn't want to have to overpay for it. But they kind of got what they wanted anyway. They said, "All right, we need these open standards, or we're not going to bid." And they pretty much got it.
I think what's going to be interesting is, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, and I don't know if anyone else remembers back in the 90s how AT&T used to have these, like, complete product ad placement sci-fi movie of the week kind of things. Does anyone else remember that?
I think so. Do you remember names or anything?
No, I can't remember. Like, one of them was, like, people who live forever, but some of the people turned into Neanderthals and stuff like that because they took the special health serum, and some people didn't take it because they didn't want it. They wanted to grow old naturally. And so only certain people with certain gems on their hand could, like, breed, otherwise they get Cro-Magnons for kids. But, like they totally had this, like, it was, like, AT&T's, like, phone service everywhere, like, on all the screens.
And, yeah, AT&T's phone service has ruined civilization. I can totally see that happening.
But it was interesting because, like, they totally focused on, like, you know, AT&T provided, you know, 3D phone support, 3D interface stuff. And the idea that, you know, you have this straight digital interface and this kind of, like it was that whole entire 90s, you know, the future of mobile devices thing. Like, you know how Apple did the whole, like, the future of the Apple tablet during the 80s and the Apple phone, if you remember those promo videos they used to have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of wonder how much longer do we actually have that stuff from the 80s and early 90s actually be the technology we have now? Like, if anyone remembers the sci-fi television series Gene Roddenberry's Earth, Earth Contact. It was where the ones where the aliens come down and are all bald looking and stuff like that, and with the purple jumpsuits. They had the phones that you pull out, and it's a video phone. And I'm wondering, when am I going to get my, you know, not VGA quality video voice thing, but actually a real video phone? Like,
well, the question is, when is it going to happen in America? Because Japan already has that because of, you know, the fact that they have good, you know, it's not a very big country, but they're also able to have really strong networks, too. It's not going to be too long.
It's like, whoa. Japan never counts, because they have right now, like, 20 megabit per... They have $20 a month, 100 megabit fiber to the house.
Yeah. Have you guys seen the... What is that service? Quick or Kick? The Kick application on the Droid? That phone...
The streaming video one?
QIK.
Yeah, QIK. Yeah. That phone broadcasts 720 by 480 DVD quality video, which is kind of it's kind of phenomenal.
It's
so
awesome.
We're getting there slowly.
Do you actually, with the Android version, can you actually chat in the chat room and have people ask you questions to ask on the phone as well, like they have on the Nokia?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen it running. All I've seen is that the video, the live streaming video, does work, and it works pretty well. So.
In my experience using it, no, you can't actually engage with people on it. You're sort of holding the...
Yeah.
Your phone just turns into a window on what you're seeing. But I think the main problem with that one is actually microphones, because, you know, you're capturing... You can capture good video, but the audio is just absolute garbage. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, the one thing is, when it came to recording with mobile video like that, with, you know, the Ustreams and Quicks and stuff like that, a lot of people always touted the Nokia Navigator series, because mm-hmm. it would actually show the chat window while you're recording your video. So half of the pane on the full screen window would be your window of the video, and the other half would be the chat window with people asking you questions, and you could actually text back while you were on the phone.
That just seems so weird and kludgy, because you're going to be moving the camera as you're typing. I don't know. I think the addition of the chat room would be good, but I haven't seen it running in Android.
Now, when it comes to government interaction, particularly with the cell phone industry, we now have Julius Chenikowski is our new FCC chairman, who's very, very strong and staunch on a lot of liberal ideas, as many cell phone industry people I've heard say, particularly with, you know, having, you know...
I wonder why they're so against this. I know.
Yeah. The idea that they would force them to have mandated, you know, costs, like the Congress investigating, and then also the network neutrality. What are your views on network neutrality? Because right now there's a big schism in, like, the EFF, for example, because they don't necessarily want self-governing from the companies, like from the cell phone carriers and ISPs, but they also don't want large government to, you know, jump in there. And there's this big debate right now. And that really, I think, will affect mobile smartphones in the future. What are your views on that?
I'll talk about Chenikowski first, because I interviewed him once last month, and you're right. I think he's definitely pushing for, or at least creating, illusion of big government, or at least big regulation. But a lot of the things they investigate and issue queries about, I don't think they actually have the authority to do anything about. So when they looked into the Google Voice issue with the iPhone and AT&T, I think they were kind of just asking about collusion, but other things they were bringing up, like what are you going to do? You going to tell Apple what they have to carry in their store? I think a lot of Jenikowski's mindset is to appease the tech community because he's fairly new to the job, and to make it look like change is happening.
Well, I mean, at least they're trying to do something, because like against net neutrality, we're seeing all sorts of stuff like McCain's Internet Freedom Act, and it's just kind of.
It's like he doesn't even know how to use a computer, and he's like, I want freedom on the internet.
Yeah, freedom. But you know, ultimately, like, I don't understand why we can't deal with the internet the same way we're dealing with other, I guess, sort of utilities or other services in America. The big problem is that the internet isn't, it's hard to, like, decide what the FCC can control and what's, like, internationally domain or something.
Now, particularly with, when it comes to internet is an international, you know, network. Yeah. It's no longer really U.S. DARPANET based. I mean, you still have people saying that the Federal Trade Commission should control ICANN still and things like that. But with mobile networks, you're starting to see this push of people who are going to be easily going across, you know, the pond and stuff like that for, you know, business. How do you think that's going to affect, you know, will we see an international cell phone carrier in the future, do you think?
Well, to a degree, we see that now. I mean, you know, Verizon is owned by Vodafone. Mm-hmm. T-Mobile is obviously owned by T-Mobile. You know, around the whole world, it's pretty much, you've got like four or five just giant cell phone people dealing independently in every country. So I guess I didn't quite get the question.
Well, I mean, like, the idea that right now, if I'm on Verizon, I have to pay an arm and a leg if I go over to Europe with a world phone for a, you know, data service and a phone minutes. But then at the same time, if I'm on, like, AT&T, I could just, if I had an unlocked phone, I could easily just throw a SIM in. Do you think there'll be someone where it doesn't matter where I am, as long as I get service, I'll get the same base price rate without having to pay extra? Like, actually, Sprint has, you pay $5 extra a month, and you get unlimited data for most of their phones, as well as unlimited minutes. You get your minutes as well as just normal minutes. But no other real carrier does an international plan that's that cheap. I mean, even with, you know, the fact that is owned by 25% of Verizon company itself is owned by Vodafone, and then like 45% of the Verizon Wireless is owned by Vodafone, and then Deutsche Welle Telekom owns T-Mobile. There's still that, you know.
Well, I guess there's
rape the consumer.
I guess there's kind of very little reason for them to want to offer that plan when now they can just charge an arm and a leg when you go overseas. I mean, it's sort of business. It's not so much that there's a barrier there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd much rather they focus on getting the the domestic prices down instead of dealing with the few people who do a lot of international traveling.
I mean, that's a big issue in the EU, people traveling between countries.
That's true.
But the European Commission has, unfortunately, I can't remember if it's actually been completed yet, but they're setting maximum roaming fees and things like that for people, you know, on day trips to another country. That's who would benefit the most from it. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to have to search real quick.
Yeah, I can tell you I was in Greece 2 months ago and with my iPhone, and I paid $25 for an international data roaming plan, which bought me 20 megabytes. And I'm used to using my iPhone a lot for web surfing. And let me tell you, those 20 megabytes went by in the first 3 days. and then I ended up incurring overage charges. So normally we have two phones on AT&T. Our bill is about $115-$120 bucks a month. You know, my bill was $300. And it was, you know, definitely, you know, I felt the effect of metering for the first time. I was watching my mobile web surfing behavior, and it didn't feel comfortable.
I was being watched by the man.
Yeah.
Well, that's most the thing. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think AT&T's top guy, the CEO, was I think AT&T was sort of suggesting a couple of months ago that, you know, this notion of metering, you know, mobile broadband, and what will that mean if you know, we're spoiled now with these unlimited, you know, $30 a month data plans or $20 a month data plans, you know, what happens when if they really decide to meter?
Well, it seems it's like technically unlimited, but isn't there like an invisible barrier on the iPhone data plan, at least, where stuff could happen if you go over it? I don't know.
Plus, there's just a lot of things you can't do. Like, you go onto iTunes, you can't download something bigger than 10 megabytes. For a while, you couldn't do VoIP over 3G. You can't do video streaming on AT&T. They just put those barriers in place, so while they say it's unlimited internet, and yeah, you can surf the web all day if you want to, you're really not using up that much bandwidth.
Now, one thing particularly also with government regulation is the FCC's new rules for infrastructure build-out, particularly when it comes to the placement of cell phone towers. They recently did a very, very aggressive stance on building out infrastructure by saying that any cell phone company can put out a cell phone tower as long as they give notice, and within 30 days of notice, if no one complains, they can put the towers out. And recently with Deutsche Welle Telekom, they just provided, I can't remember exactly how much, I wanted to say it was, I heard $10 billion because the dollar is so cheap, it was only 6 billion, euro, but they're providing them a large market capital to build out T-Mobile's infrastructure. Because of those new rules, what are your views on how that might affect the gameplay around the United States?
Well, I think part of that are our cell sites. I for one think that our, you know, the layouts and the actual mechanics of the cell sites are kind of inefficient. There's who makes it in Europe? There is a it's Ericsson. They make it's a portable cell tower, and it's essentially like a 45-foot tall stick of gum. I mean, that's what it looks like. It's, you know, about 6 feet around, this super tall thing, and you can stick them anywhere. And, you know, in the U.S. we've had real kind of, because of the issues with zoning and space allotment and everything, the cell towers have had to go up in strange places. And so I think I actually am in favor of this thing where cell towers can go up with in whatever, 3 to 6 months. I don't know if you agree or disagree with me.
It was supposed to be 30 days, I believe. They had as long as they made, like they said, you let people know that in 30 days you're going to put up a tower, and you can, if no one says anything, you can just put the tower up. And that was the new FCC guideline for building out infrastructure on cell phone towers.
Maybe I'm thinking of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The thing I was reading was it was 3 to 6 months for local, because it's up to the local government. That's not a federal government thing.
Okay. And then now for our final part of our discussion, particularly on what do you want out of the future of mobile phones? Like, what is it that you really pine for in your mobile device? You know, we'll just start down the row with Tim.
Well, I love this question. Thank you for asking it. I am one of those people who, I'm sure everyone is the same. We are rewarded when we look at our phones. We pull it out of our pocket every 2 minutes to check for messages, to check for tweets, to check for whatever. So I always, you know, when I pull out my phone and there's nothing to look at, I sort of, you know, I'm beyond disappointed. I actually almost get sad. So
you're like the mouse hitting the button for pellets or something.
And instead, you get shocked on the floor.
Exactly.
Nothing comes out.
The stagger reward is what it is. So that's me not getting my reward. So I would like something to reward me every time I pull out my phone and there's no messages. Just something for me to look at that's different, that I can be like, oh, okay, cool. And that, you know.
Here's like a dancing flicker squirrel or something. Yeah.
a random photograph of a celebrity doing something embarrassing. I don't know.
Hey, you could have like the HD2, which is that new Windows phone from HTC that actually has the windshield wiper go back and forth on the widget for the weather when it's raining.
That's
nice.
But I mean, like, particularly, like, what is it that you really want to get out of a phone for a future mobile internet-connected device that you could fit in your pocket, Tim.
As a person who doesn't use voice communication as much as everyone else does, I have a line just for voice communication, and my cell phone is pretty much for asynchronous. You know, I'm texting and I'm checking email and checking internet stuff. I guess it's more on the networks for me. I would like to be able to access all of this asynchronous communication with as much ease and as little lag as possible. I mean, I guess it's a modest hope that is actually much more difficult to get, but you know, I'm not looking for a holographic, you know, 3D phone or whatever the new, what is it? It's that phone with like the transparent display.
That Sony one.
Yeah, because we can't make a smartphone. We'll give you a transparent display.
Yeah, exactly. we'll make
future.
Well, actually, go ahead.
So you're all about the fast communications. You're the Fast and the Furious cell phone drift of cell phone future mobile devices.
Absolutely, and I like that. Yes.
Yeah. speed's definitely going to be a thing, but I can't wait to see all these dumb phones die, because I'm helping my folks look for just like a plain phone, you know, right now, not a smartphone. And the choices out there are just all kind of the same now. And it's like, mm-hmm. there are no real defining features. Maybe some have better cameras than others or whatever. But overall, you know, there's not much going on. So I can't wait till more devices are just connected and, you know, the prices of the subscriptions go down so that everyone has data access. And I think it was Nokia that had like this weird demo of a wearable cell phone that's like a wrist strap. And mm-hmm. then you can also pull it out and use it as like a almost like a big screen phone, like an iPhone 2. That sort of convergence, I think, will be really interesting. Because like while I'm out jogging, you can't have your iPhone with you. You can't have your normal phone with you. But if you could have something like, you know, a communication device on your wrist, perhaps tied to your actual your current cell phone plan. That would make sense to me. Like, the technology has to adapt for how we're living. And I'm sort of sometimes feeling constrained being tied to one device, too.
You're basically describing one of those, like, Casio watches with the calculator on it?
Sort of, except this one was like an organic OLED screen. And it was like those little like bracelets you used to have in school, where if you like flip, you know, hit it against your arm, it would like flip around real quick.
The slappers.
Those were banned in my school.
So I want a slapper cell phone, damn it. That's what I want.
Mark?
Holograms?
You're one of those guys who wants to have a projector in his phone, don't you?
That would actually be pretty damn cool.
That'd be a good idea. Yeah.
To project like photos or videos onto a wall, I think that would actually be cool.
That's a great idea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Only if it had lasers, I think. Laser beams. Frickin' laser beams in the projector.
Well, of course. It has to have lasers. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just a fan of this whole decentralized idea. I don't know how much truth there is to Arrington's piece on TechCrunch about avoid the Google phone. Maybe it's more like, I would really like to see this, so I'm going to say it's going to happen. Maybe they'll make it. But, I mean, I'm with that idea. I think that's great. I like this whole decentralized, like, there's no longer the TV public airwaves, the voice communication public airwaves. It's just all digital and all going through this one pipe. And I want to be able to pay $30 or $40. I don't know how much is a MiFi. I want to be able to pay for this ubiquitous wireless internet and be able to do everything on it, not have to pay a separate plan for voice and mm-hmm. and have to think at the end of the month, oh crap, I only used 200 of my 400 minutes. Like, what a waste. Yeah, I mean, it's all digital, so you should be paying one price for unlimited everything.
Well, you do know, though, on AT&T, those minutes are still good. You can't just throw those minutes
away. Oh, there's rollover minutes. Oh,
yay.
Using those. Oh,
it's like, there are people who don't get to keep those minutes in other countries. Gus, what's your hopes and dreams for a future mobile device that makes you pine and drool like a little boy looking at steak at Christmas?
I would love a device that does not drop my calls. It's plain and simple.
Are you on AT&T?
You must be.
Yeah, yeah.
I got one of those devices.
Yeah.
There is a map for that.
For that, right.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, I have to tell you, like, it's very frustrating. My wife and I both have iPhones, and we probably have I would say a 50% drop rate here in Baltimore, where just about one out of two calls that we're making to each other are getting dropped. And I seem to have a dead spot in my house, which is here in the city. But still, it's really kind of funny to talk about all these fancy new, you know, gee whiz product features and to kind of still want, you know, and pine for, you know, a crystal clear voice connection.
Yeah, basic phone functionality.
Yeah. I think we can't forget that. I mean, that's voice may still be the killer app, right? You know,
that's a good point, because when I switched to AT&T from Verizon, I basically felt like I was going back in time. I was like, what? Why am I dropping all of these calls? I used to be able to talk to someone for more than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like, 1 second, let me get my StarTAC phone here.
Yeah.
How you doing?
And I just read a story today, and I have to dig up the clip and share it with you guys, but just how this feature that you see in other countries like Korea and Japan, where people use their phones to pay for things, you know, and use SMS to move money around, basically. And we don't have that here. And that, when you think about it, I mean, that's an end run, you know, potentially around credit card companies, you know, and it opens up a whole new potential industry. I would love to use my phone for useful things like buying things, ordering a pizza, you know, and not having to worry about pulling out my wallet or my credit card and typing in a 15-digit code and all that stuff. Yeah.
I mean, there are apps now for like the various movie apps out there where you can just buy your movie tickets while you're walking to the theater, on your iPhone.
Right.
Just pick it up right there. No, don't need to pull out your credit card or anything.
The guy who built Twitter, Jack Dorsey, is actually working on that very product where you attach a small device. It's called Square. You attach a small device to the bottom of the iPhone, and it's basically point of sale. You go to a coffee shop, and you pull out your phone, and boop, you just paid for your coffee.
Speed pass.
Actually, a really funny thing about that is he's not going through right now from the prototype. He's not going through the actual iPod dock. He's going through the microphone jack, because when he swipes the magnetic card reader, it's able to interpret the magnetic resistance and send that as a microphone signal instead.
Wow.
Right, and you know why that is, because just about every smartphone has a microphone built in. So
exactly.
You can port to any phone.
As long as they use, you know, the 3.5-inch microphone jack and not the 1.8 or the, you know, even smaller one or proprietary USB connector
like the
original G1 had. It's like we all go the ubiquitous facepalm at the same time on that stuff.
Ever.
Devendra, did we get to you yet on your hope for a digital device?
It's going
to
be the slapper, I guess. Although, you know, I didn't say anything for the first question, what I think the future of smartphones will be, but it's pretty much the same thing. The notion of like a dumb phone that doesn't have any sort of data access, and we're still seeing that now too. Like if you buy a plain phone, you can still sometimes get like really crappy web access and various other, like, maybe sometimes IM functionality on that phone. But I just want that line to go away. I want smart devices to be everywhere, and, you know, I think that I can't wait until that happens, because it's just I kind of want to communicate with everyone the way I do with my few friends who have iPhones.
Actually, I think that future is coming up pretty fast with the smartphones replacing everything.
Yep.
You're starting to see on both Walmart and Amazon the new Pixie WebOS phone being sold for $30 with a special rebate.
Well, that was more of a problem with the Pre, because the Pre's price was never all that different, and then it just kept falling.
But I mean, you do have that Pixie that's going to be, you know, only $30, and eventually that's probably going to be free. And so that's going to be the first smartphone that will be free.
It has to be.
And I think the one really big thing is that in the next couple of months, Verizon is going to be offering LTE. And we don't see any of those phones yet. And I haven't heard of any carriers have any real plans for it. You just recently had Ericsson buy out Novatel's entire manufacturing plants and process for all their LTE equipment. And AT&T says they're going to jump on that bandwagon, but they are still touting HSPDA Plus, as they like
the 7.2 megabit connection. Well, I mean, that's the good thing AT&T has going for, is that everyone with an iPhone 3GS, and I'm sure some of their other phones coming down the line, will just be able to get those faster speeds. And that would be a real benefit for them, whereas with Verizon, you know, you have to wait till you get a new phone to take advantage of LTE.
Well, isn't the question of LTE still... It actually hasn't been solved yet. How do they do voice over LTE? Because you're talking about switching between a circuit switch network to a packet switch network. And as far as I know, I don't think that's been standardized for LTE. So you can do everything else, data really fast, but you can't make a voice call.
Well, there is the rumor, again, that I've heard with Verizon and Google, is that they're actually going to try to partner up and do a... Like, you know how Verizon had that... the failed home mobile touch tablet device
phone.
Yes, the hub. Supposedly, they are actually going to try to incorporate both the Verizon Fios service with direct phone, so you no longer have to actually have the line. You just have straight digital. Mm. And so that your phone service is actually, again, going to be this VoIP app that runs on both your Fios service, and then also you could have a window open up on your, you know, your computer that has your voice come over it as well. And then you could have it also go over your data plan, because LTE has that maximum speed of, I believe right now, 50 megabits per second in some test environments, and could technically go up to 102, I believe, last I read.
Right.
So even if they do start selling it like how, you know, DOCSIS 3 for Comcast is being sold at only 25 and 50, while at Cablevision they do 101 megabits per second for you people who live in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
Darn you, Devendra. I hate you. but you will see them probably have the internet be at maybe starting around 25 to 30 megabits per second with the LTE, I personally feel. And so if they were to just say, you know what, screw that channel for voice, screw the channel for SMS, they'll just do some sort of workaround so it, you know, ports it forward to other phones.
Yeah, why shouldn't it be all digital? Like, really?
Because then they don't have to worry about that anymore, and all they have to do is just throw in new router devices and bigger backbones that are straight digital rather than having to do, you know, patched lines.
But see, then you have the issue with all their legacy networks, and, you know, so what are you going to have? The next device, you know, it poses some logistical trouble for the upcoming devices if they're going to be 100% digital. So, like, they would actually be creating a walled garden, I guess, is the term.
So what would it be, Laura, like 32648 at prodigy.com, or, you know, something like that again? You know, back in the days where, because they didn't have the eights in there, because it was octet-based numbers for user account numbers for, you know, Quantum or Prodigy or, you know... the other internet services of the era.
You were dropping some old school lingo right there.
You just beat dude, that dude, part.
All I gotta say is, well, hell, no one knows it like me. if you know what I'm talking about, you'll know and you'll laugh. And you did.
I still have the Quantum Link startup disk somewhere from my Commodore 64.
nice. Yeah. Like, I think it's definitely interesting to just do this as a side note as well. The idea that you have a lot of these new countries, old countries with new internet users using mobile phones to begin with. I feel sorry for them if it's a really, really crappy mobile phone because, you know, multi-touch. Oh, wait, they'll have multi-touch on their Android phones over in Africa.
Yeah,
we won't. Eventually.
So, I mean, like, it's an interesting idea that, you know, you look at kids nowadays and
kids these
do some
days.
Graphics. I know, I'm only 25, I'm already saying that. And you see kids who are able to do, you know, CSS, Canvas, and all these things like that. And I'm like, oh, I made... So I just went into your computer and I added more RAM. I also added it so that it does mobile web. How do you enjoy that? And you're like, are you sure this is not some sort of internet meme? Cause it's like, you just see the way that, you know, they're able to make these, you know, sites now. And they're very user interface based. While I come from a time where I was all about the Commodore 64 BASIC and Unix console, and I still have to have my terminal on all of my smartphones. Like, it has to have access to SSH, or it won't be good.
You're one of those people who talked trash about the WIMP interface. Is that what, where the with the window icon or whatever? I don't even remember what it was. The anti GUI people.
You're a little old school, Patrick.
I like GUI, okay? Like, I bought a Mac for a reason. It's BSD with a pretty face, okay? I switched over to Macs from, you know, Gen 2 you know, when I saw the Titaniums first come out. But that's all a mute issue. We're talking about cell phones here, and I will get away from that. So, everyone, it was excellent having you on today for the Planet 8 podcast, and I'll go down the row and ask for each of you to tell me where we can find more of your work. Tim?
www.betanews.com for my daily heavy workload of a lot of articles, and then my blog, androidbakery.com, dedicated to the Android operating system.
Mark?
I'm at latimes.com/tech, and my blog is heynice.blog.com.
Gus?
I'm at baltimoresun.com/balttech. That's BALTTECH. And my Twitter is GusSent.
Okay. And Devendra?
You can find the Symbiotic podcast at symbiotk.tumblr.com. And you can also reach me on Twitter at twitter.com/Devendra.
This has been the Plan 8 podcast panel discussion edition. And thank you for listening.